This is RÚV English Radio with Darren Adam, daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÚV.
Hello, RÚV English Radio. My name is Darren Adam. Thanks very much for your company. On this Monday afternoon, it's the day after the night before, as far as Sungvakeppnin is concerned, just one of the stories that we're going to look at here, the final of that taking place a couple of days ago, with my guest today, Ingunn Lára, Kristján's daughter, no stranger to the week in Iceland. Hello.
Oh, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Glad that you're here too, as ever. Were you watching then on Saturday?
I was watching it with one eye open.
What was the other one doing?
Well, you know, going out with like friends and then having it like on the phone watching
it. I see.
Yeah.
So Vibe were the winners, of course. We're going to play
the
song
at the
end. Second time lucky for them. They came fourth last year, but they roared through.
Oh, yeah.
With this new system, with the international jury and the points coming from the public as well, which I think obviously worked quite well for Vibe because they came top in both.
Yeah, they got rid of that that final duel that we've gotten quite used to over the years. So right now it's much closer to the Melody Festival in Sweden, which is like most people would say that's the proper way to do it. If the Swedes are doing something a certain way, then we should be doing it that way.
Yes, and that's why it's called the Swedish method.
Swedish method.
Swedish method. just one of the things I was explaining on Saturday, because I had the enormous privilege of offering the English language commentary.
Gosh, how was it?
It was great fun. I did it last year as well. It's even better this year because we were also on the Eurovision Song Contest official YouTube channel as well. So you could watch it on the RÚV player in Iceland.
Oh, amazing.
But anywhere else on the face of the planet, you could watch it on the YouTube stream. So great fun. Absolutely wonderful thing to do. Explaining the Swedish method was one of the things that I did as well. But I think the point is that, as you touched on there, if Swedish people are doing things a certain way when it comes to Eurovision, they've got a bit of success in this area.
Yes, they do. I mean, they are the experts in Eurovision. I mean, they're at the top of their game every year. They have so many winners and they're practically running Eurovision. I mean, that it's their game. And if anybody does pop, perfect. It's the Swedes. I mean, they dominate in the like American music industry as well with all these Swedish producers.
Yes.
So they know how to do music.
Basically from ABBA onwards,
it's
been pretty much perfect as far as Sweden is concerned. I think they are still actually, again, I should say, at number one in the betting odds already for this year.
Yeah.
That's before Vibe, of course.
And Vibe, they are moving up in the polls.
That is good.
So I think, you know, getting rid of the duel, I think it was a good choice because now we are getting the proper winners. I mean, these are people that have the most points from the start. And I think that's, I mean, I think it's only fair.
Yeah.
And they are quite popular with the younger generation. So these are two brothers and they've got this amazing band of matching dancers in the background. They're high energy. There has been some controversy about the song with the news saying that it has been plagiarized from an Israeli song.
An old wedding song, I think.
Yes.
But they claim that they've never listened to Israeli wedding music.
I don't think Israeli music is that known in Iceland. I mean,
no.
To be fair, where would they have found that song? And every single type of music has been written, so everything we write now it's going to sound like something.
All of the notes have been used.
Yeah, and I should know, like I'm a huge Taylor Swift fan. Who by the way,
you never mention it.
And she uses a lot of Swedish producers, mind you.
Yes.
But a lot of her songs, they will use the same chord progression, and I mean, That's how writing music works.
Yes, absolutely. And every Eurovision, there is a suggestion that something maybe sounds a bit like
every
something else.
Every single year.
I remember the Norwegian entry last year sounded very much to my ears like Salva Meir by Faithless.
Did it?
Yeah.
I didn't hear it.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of that.
Took me back to the 90s.
So, you know, we're bound to get, these types of news every single year. But, you know, as I was saying, these are young guys. They have a lot of following, huge on TikTok. And every time they have like a meet and greet, it'll be packed with their young fans. So they're definitely like up and coming, very fresh new talent.
And you're all across social media here, of course, at RÚV,
as
we've mentioned. So do you see them pop up?
Oh, yes, all the time. And they know how to work it. Like they are experts in this field. And some people say, they're quite young. And some people saying that, you know, are they 17, 18? No, these are like 23, 24-year-olds. And they are hard workers and they are, you know, they're not just like silly young boys. They are.
And they wrote the song as well. They wrote the song that they performed with last year too. So they're not just puppets. I mean, this is their concept, isn't it?
Definitely not. Yeah, I mean, they are almost like a, you know, a company. They know how to run things, definitely.
Well, let's see if they know how to win at Eurovision, because they are officially Iceland's entry in the Eurovision Song Contest, which happens in May. And I think after a couple of disappointing years. We had two great performers. We had Hera Björk, who did an amazing set on Saturday. It was a wonderful set. Did a great job for Iceland last year. And Delia the year before, who was also part of Saturday's show doing some of the interviews. Mm-hmm. Two great performers, two great songs. They didn't qualify in the end for the main final on the Saturday night. I think at the very least this will.
Oh, yeah. I have a feeling that this one will definitely... will qualify. And it's been a rough few decades for us in Eurovision. never won. The closest we've come to is second place with Johanna Guðrún and of course Selma Björnsdóttir, which was one of my favorites, All Out of Luck. Love that song. But yeah, and it doesn't really feel the same. Like the anticipation for Eurovision doesn't really feel the same. Well, since all of the protests started, which began with the war in Gaza, that people were angry that that Israel was still qualifying, and of course we had massive protests here in Iceland and in other Nordic countries, and I think that really sort of dampened people's spirits, and they don't really feel like, you know, it's not really a festival anymore.
I think last year as well, even more so, because there was a separation between Sungvakeppnin and
was.
Eurovision.
That was the major change that happened last year.
Yes. So we didn't know during the competition, even if the winner of the competition would ultimately decide to take part. And of course, Hera Björk did. But last year, it was just about winning Sungvakeppnin. This year, we're very much back to picking a winner that will represent the country at Eurovision.
Yes. And I think the decision that was made last year, you know, it did not go well for Hera. I mean, she was demolished on social media. And, you know, poor thing that just wanted to go and, you know,
and sing. And she sang brilliantly. And I think, as I say, the set that she did at the Sungvakeppnin final this year was just wonderful. You know, it took the roof off the place.
Oh, well, she is such an amazing performer. Yeah. And she teaches singing as well. She's one of the best singing teachers in Iceland.
Okay, well, Vibe are the winners this year of Sungvakeppnin. They will be going forward to Switzerland. And we'll play out with that song, Roa.
Roa.
Which means?
To row. To row.
Just to row, isn't it?
To row.
It's just that. Yeah,
and you can row, see row, row your boat.
There's a bit of that because I think in the staging, the boat that they're in only appears for about 10 seconds.
Yeah.
So blink and you'll miss it. But row, if you're wondering if it's as simple as just translating that into English as rowing, the answer is yes. Yes, it is. Now, we'll play out with that at the end of the show. As we have our conversation about 2 o'clock on Monday afternoon, the leader of the Epling Union and also the General and Special Workers Union in Iceland, who have held meetings with the government over this cleaning wage dispute. Mm-hmm. They're waiting for the Prime Minister to respond, having met the government about these proposed changes. So just a bit of context on this, because we have talked about it before. These are cleaning companies that on the face of it have been treating particularly foreign workers, who maybe didn't know their rights, pretty badly.
Yeah, there were some... Well, I can just say shocking news that came out in the week about these cleaners that had, I mean, I think the thing that shocked me was just seeing their schedule, that they were expected to hit all of these marks. They only had like a certain amount of time to clean, well, sometimes quite large places. And I've worked as a cleaner.
Yeah.
I worked as a cleaner for, I think, 5 years. And I know just from my experience that is a ridiculous timetable. No way that you could do it properly, professionally, and still have time to eat, go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Which, of course, we heard that they didn't have any time at all. They had a few minutes to eat, you know, in their own words, didn't have time to go to the bathroom, so they would have to use buckets on the way from one place to another. I mean, this was, it really shook the nation,
and
these stories.
In some cases, reports of wage reductions of up to 20%, because if you are going to put someone on a timetable, that has to come with a financial consequence, doesn't it? There's got to be a financial connection to the rate that you're making people work at. And that it seems, did not happen in some cases. So the chair of Epling, who we saw a lot on the TV a couple of years ago, she was all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Solveig Anna.
She's back, baby.
She's back. she's back, 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 saying that her union and also the SGS,
yes,
as
all
I
of
say,
the main ones.
They are now waiting for the Prime Minister to come back with some of the ideas that they've talked about with government. And there's been some pressure, I think, from some of the other unions leaning on the Prime Minister, maybe not unreasonably, saying, you know, she is a Social Democrat.
This is the
kind of issue that you'd expect a Social Democratic Party to be concerned about, particularly when it comes to government agencies and municipalities, perhaps unwittingly, using these companies, using these cleaning companies.
So I think right now the Prime Minister is in Ukraine because 3 years since the start of the Russia's invasion into Ukraine.
Yes.
But I think this is going to be a very important issue for her government, and how they tackle it is, I think, it's going to impact them a lot, because they have been in the in the hot seat for the past few weeks, her and the other parties in her government. So I think the way they handle this, I think it's going to like set the scene for.
Yes, I agree. It's the first big issue, isn't it?
I feel this is an important issue. This is like I said, you know, these shocking stories about how these foreign workers were treated, and the fact that this is a Social Democratic Party. So
yes,
it's going to be interesting to see how she plays it out. And I can imagine, I mean, the way she has been speaking, that this is a very important issue to her, and she wants to deal with this properly. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, and there was a call made by unions that municipalities and other sort of government or state agencies should break their contracts. They should terminate the contracts with these companies. I wonder if that is the best idea, because then you run the risk of some of the poorest people in the country being unemployed as a consequence of that. Surely the best solution here is to fix these contracts and make sure the companies are paying people properly.
Yeah, exactly, because so you never know like what kind of like drastic measures are needed for this, or if it's just a matter of slight changes in a contract. But I'm just so surprised that these, you know, that this would probably not hold up in court.
No,
I can't imagine.
And it comes down, in many cases, it seems, to people of foreign origin not understanding the rights that they have in Icelandic law, and maybe companies deliberately or otherwise taking advantage of that.
Yeah. And I mean, this is just there should be, and I'm guessing there is this clause of that they have a duty to give them the information that they need, that they have a duty to let the workers know what their rights are.
Yes.
And if not, then maybe this is a thing of you know, that the unions need to go into some kind of marketing campaign to get to these groups that are constantly being
Solveig Anna is very determined, I think it is fair to say. So if that is what's needed, and if there is a sense that workers need to be told their rights, I'm pretty sure that union certainly, and maybe the other ones, will be doing exactly that right now, because I think a lot of these cleaning workers know a lot more than they did 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago already. Okay, staying with politics, in the capital, the new city council and mayor announced just towards the end of the weekend. So this all came about very quickly, because we're not talking about the national government here. This is the management, if you like, of Reykjavik, the city council. That coalition collapsed on the 7th of February.
Yeah, to the surprise of many.
Yes.
Because of the subject matter, because this all boils down to this argument we've been having about the Reykjavik airport.
Is that what broke? Is that the straw that broke the camel's back?
That was the
then?
Straw that broke the camel's back to a lot of our. It was a surprise, because this is something that has been a matter of debate for decades and decades, and we've never really found a solution. It's, you know, people are passionate about this because it's a matter of, you know, do we want to use this massive land to building homes for people, or do we want to keep the airport there? Do we want to move the airport? Where would we move it to? And the fact that this sort of broke the borgarstjórnin, how do I say borgarstjórnin?
It's the city council.
Would break the city council was a surprise. And I think that the mayor, he was relying on certain other parties to be able to then create a new
coalition. A new majority. Yeah.
And he didn't have the support that he needed. And so he sort of broke it all off without having a
path to...
Yeah, like not really knowing properly that he was going to have these parties with him.
Lyndon B. Johnson, first rule of politics, according to him, learn how to count. Make sure you got the votes.
No, I think it's that. I mean, yeah. I think it was a matter of one or two members of getting a majority. And now we have a new majority.
Five parties.
And the leader of all these five parties are women. So right now we are at an interesting time here in Iceland. We have a woman who is a... We have a president, prime minister, chief of police, head of the church, and all five leading parties in the capital area, in Reykjavik.
Now, I've got the photo of the five of them here, and I know that the national government, the three-party leaders, described themselves as the Valkyrie government. I've heard these five described as the Spice Girls. Yeah. I hope that that's a name they came up with themselves. Otherwise, it's pretty sexist.
Yeah, no, they came up with that name themselves. It's not like the media going, oh, let's give every group of women a funny...
Let's put Baby Spice in charge of transport in Reykjavik.
No, but
that's
I really love when you look over the photo, they really are the Spice Girls. But it comes back to they were meeting in one of their homes. And when they were outside, they were asked, okay, so how was it? Like, you were all meeting together. Yes, we had... So I think they had like krit kaka or krit bröd or something, which is like a spice cake. So they were like, yes, we all met and we had this spice cake. So you could say that we are the Spice
Girls.
There
it is. Okay, that's where it came from. From the choice of coalition snack.
This is such a, you know, this is great stuff for the media. It's nice to have nicknames to make it easier.
Yes, well, that coalition then
The Valkyries and the Spice Girls.
The Spice Girls will be running Reykjavik for another 15 months, I think, until the next
city
elections.
Yeah, they don't have that much time. I mean, you could see on their, you know, when they come together and they put out their sort of statement, how they will work together. I think theirs was 3 pages long.
Yes.
And the last one was, what, 30 pages?
But so, a new mayor as well, we should say.
Yeah, a new mayor from Samfylkingin, the Social Democrat as well. So we have leaders in Reykjavik and government, leaders of the Social Democrats, different from what is happening in Europe.
It feels that way, doesn't it?
Yeah, which are moving more towards sort of conservative right in some cases, like populist parties.
Yes. That said, it looks as if in Germany we're looking at a two-party grand coalition.
Oh,
the numbers, at least as we sit here today.
Yeah, and AfD got like the second highest vote in Germany.
Yes.
It wasn't really a surprise because that's what all the numbers, the polls were saying.
And I know that we've got a team out there just now covering that and also, again, sticking with, you know, international affairs as they relate to Iceland, I suppose, as you mentioned, the Prime Minister of Iceland currently in Ukraine
as well.
So a lot going on throughout the rest of Europe.
But I want to... Europe is at a boiling point.
Yes. Let's bring it right back to the centre of Reykjavik, and on, when would this have been, Thursday or Friday of last week, a bus...
Oh, gosh.
...got stuck
the bus
on
at Hovde.
Lawn at Hovde House. And Hovde House is...
This is a legendary place. Yeah. This is the place where Reagan and Gorbachev met. This is where...
We're back to international affairs again, really, aren't we?
Yes, this is where the Baltics had their support from Iceland about breaking off from the Soviet Union. This is a legendary place. Gorgeous house that just stands sort of on its own with a view to the sea.
It's amazing. You drive past it and think, I really want to live there.
Oh, yeah.
It would be
wonderful. It's been the home of legends like Einar Behn, the poet and politician who sort of, you know, redefined the Icelandic poetry scene. So this has been, you know, it's a legendary place. And this grassy area around it that, you know, people aren't really allowed to step on.
Because it's a lawn.
But then a bus driver decided to, I need to turn this bus around, so I'm just going to drive across the lawn, get stuck.
Now, do we? Because there's an aerial photo here. It looks like she's been doing donuts, basically,
on the
lawn. But, I mean, if you read into the story, you do feel very sorry for her, because I think...
So this was a young, inexperienced driver, according to the owner of the bus company, who very literally threw her under the bus.
Yes, yes. And sadly, there's a bit of tarmac to the left. And you think, well, there's a bit of space to turn there. Mm-hmm. You can sort of see what's happened, that she's obviously thought, well, if I just edge up onto the grass a little
bit. Yeah, it'll be fine.
It'll be fine. But then, of course, the wheel started digging in and she panicked.
And kept on digging.
So.
And this is interesting because a similar thing was happening in Akureyri, I think, just the day before, where there is this grassy area that the municipality there is trying to grow a new forest. But Akureyri is famous for its car culture. So a lot of guys going into that area doing donuts, an area that they are trying to grow. And this is such a sensitive time for nature. Like, it's February, everything is still very
sleepy.
Delicate and sleepy, so so we're just going to drive over everything.
Just drive over everything. Yeah, I mean, the last picture here I'm looking at, it's like an episode of The Grand Tour. You expect Jeremy Clarkson to pop up and say, I was the first to arrive, and the producer set me a challenge. But it's also worth saying that this company have stepped right up.
Yeah,
and they've
they're
said,
they're going to pay for it.
It's a mistake. Mm-hmm. We will pay for all of the damage, and we will try to make sure it never happens again.
Yeah,
presumably.
Yeah, and it's not, you know, nobody's really blaming the young driver who, you know.
No, it could. I mean, it could happen to anyone.
It could happen to anyone.
First day in the job.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was the first day in the job. She was reasonably inexperienced, but if it had been the first day in the job, it's a hell of a story.
Oh, it's gonna impact you to be in the news, you know, for a mistake you did at your job. I mean, I can't imagine how she feels.
Unrelatedly, the production of driving licenses in Iceland is to resume after months of delays.
Oh, really?
So these are the plastic driving licenses that we have, which have been, for the last little while, they've been getting produced in Hungary.
Oh.
But the plastic has not been, it's not been possible to make them in Hungary for some time because of something to do with the plastic. You've got to get a certain type of plastic so they can't be forged, is my understanding of
it. Oh, anyway. Like specific for a license.
So basically, there has been this problem. Mm-hmm. They've now fixed it. I think 13,000 people were on the waiting list to get their plastic cars.
Wow.
That's now all going to get done remotely in Hungary, and then production is going to come back to Iceland, and the backlog should be cleared by the end of March.
Oh, interesting.
So 13,000 Icelanders.
They had been waiting for their little plastic driver's license.
Waiting
for the
plastic
I don't really
car.
Use my plastic driver's license. I have it in my phone.
Yeah, me too.
Because after the last government, they put it into law that you should be able to use, it should be you know, just as valid if it's on your phone than in plastic. So I just carry my phone everywhere. I don't really have a wallet anymore.
It is valid, but only in Iceland. So you can't hire a car with it abroad.
Oh, so I would get in trouble if I would hire a car in Scotland or
something. Yeah, you wouldn't be able to use it.
Oh, actually, maybe then I need to go on that waiting list.
But there's a serious problem here because people who were waiting for the plastic card, who had a holiday booked and had car hire booked, have, you know, found themselves in this difficult position where they are going to turn up at the desk and they won't have a plastic card. And I think there's been some temporary assistance with, you know, international driving permits being issued and such like, which might work, and hopefully it will work.
Yeah.
But I always carry my plastic card with me. I do still have a wallet, and thank you for making me feel incredibly old by mocking.
No, okay,
mocking
to be fair, I actually did have this problem a few years ago. I went to Turin, Torino in Italy for Eurovision while I was working for the newspaper Fréttablaðið. And we had, the company had hired a car, and I, being the stupid woman I am, only had my driver's license on my phone. And I was the person on the booking.
Yeah.
But then I arrived and I had nothing. Well, I did have like a credit card, and I was like, well, could I use this? Because they have to, like, you know, validate it and blah, blah, into the booking. And it became a huge hassle. So the woman I was traveling with, she had to do it, and she hadn't really driven in many, many years. So it became a thing. And you know what? That's on me.
That's on me. Yes. And to this day,
should have brought my plastic.
To this day, you've only just thought that maybe taking your plastic card would be a good idea.
Yep. That's me. Well, this is the thing about living in Iceland. Everything is very, very handy.
It is.
You can use your
handy.
Card anywhere. I haven't used cash in years until I went to Berlin and realized nobody takes cards. They only take cash. Which, I don't know, is that a tax evasion thing?
Do you know, I was in Kolaportith just before Christmas.
Yeah.
which is the market that opens up at weekends here in Reykjavik. And it's great for Christmas presents. It's great for sort of stocking fillers and things. So I went there and I went to one of the shops, one of the outlets in Kolaportith, and I bought a candle for my mother-in-law. I took it up and it was all packaged up and everything, and I paid by card as I usually do. And the woman that was serving me said, "Oh, I've charged you 1,000 kroner too much, but I can't put it back on the card, so I'm going to have to give you 1,000 kroner in cash." Oh. And this piece of paper, this banknote thing, was like sitting on a shelf in the house for about 6 months afterwards.
Never used it. Yeah, you're like, it's something you get so used to so quickly in Iceland, not having to carry cash around and everything being online. Yeah. The messaging ways are very short in Iceland. You can usually find your way around everything. Mm-hmm. We're not huge on bureaucracy.
But when I moved here, when I became a citizen, and then when I moved here, I realized that if you've got your Kennetala, which is like, it's a bit like a social security number, but much more so, it's the sort of everything number. Mm-hmm. When you've got your Kennetala and a mobile phone, you have the superpowers.
Yeah.
You can then move around Icelandic society.
Yeah.
If you don't have those, you're screwed.
Oh, you can't interesting. Do anything. Yeah.
It's really, really, really hard to do anything without a Kennetala. And of course, the purpose of the mobile phone is not just to carry all the apps, but when you log into a website here, you will usually just put in your phone number, and then your phone is taken over by some sort of magic goblin.
Where it tells you to confirm.
And then the website magically responds.
Yeah.
I've never seen it anywhere else in the world.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a thing that I'll just take this for granted because it's such a everyday thing.
It's wonderful.
Here. It is. Well, we are in the future here.
We're living in the future and we don't need to worry about 17 damn passwords because can just use your mobile phone with this magic. I don't understand it from a technical point of view. I don't know what the phone is doing. But it is. It's complete. It's not an app. The phone itself just gets taken over with this request.
Yeah, it gets taken over by some sort of like magical...
Magic goblins.
Magic goblins. Yeah, it's the elves.
It's the elves, actually.
There you
that's what
there
it is.
There you go.
Yeah, it's nothing to do with Iceland living in the future. This is to do with the elves that are able to control access to various websites.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's maybe it's that sort of same system of when you're like driving around the volcanic area and you get a text message and it's like, oh, you're driving in this dangerous area. It might erupt. We're having increased seismic activity. Da 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 da.
Yes.
Maybe it's that same sort of massive system of safety and security.
So the elves are looking after the tourists.
They are. They're
the country
kind.
Too. And those messages were indeed blasted out, I think, in the last couple of days.
Yes,
weren't they,
and sometimes outside of the main volcanic area. So some people, you know, did panic a bit. They suddenly had a message like, "Oh, you're in a danger zone."
Yes. Hey, that's something we've not mentioned in this conversation.
Oh, that's
actually.
Right.
It's
so
the possibility of another
increased
eruption.
Risk of an eruption, which we've sort of been in that phase for, 2 weeks now?
Yes. The last eruption ended in November of last year.
Yeah.
This is quite a long period
it's
to go without
It's a longer time than
eruption.
We're used to, because this used to be a monthly thing.
Yes. I mean, almost something you'd put in your Outlook calendar.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I can't go out. It might erupt.
It will erupt.
Oh, I can't get shit-faced because I don't know if I have to be on the news.
Yes, yes. Oh, well. But assuming you weren't and assuming you didn't, we're still waiting for this to happen once again. And it's all to do with the amount of magma that's under the ground.
Yeah, and it's the pressure that's building up.
And it's reached the level because they can measure these things.
They are amazing.
Absolutely amazing.
At the meteorological
Met
office.
Yeah. We know that there's enough magma now. Or there's more than there has been, I think, with previous eruptions. So we're overdue, basically.
We are. And before, we didn't need as much pressure for it to break through because, like we've seen, it's come up in the same area quite often, I think 6 or 7 times now, the Sundhnúksgígar, the Sundhnúks crater. And so I was expecting it to get here sooner. But now, it's been... Some people have been theorizing that maybe we're at the end of some era.
Yes.
But then other people will go, no, it'll just continue and we'll be forever.
Well, I mean, the smart money, as recently as about 6 months ago, was on this being a thing that would last for 10 years. So we're expecting an eruption every 4 to 6 weeks until 2035 or something. So it would be a change from that if, in fact, this has fizzled out.
Yeah. It'll be, I guess, time will tell.
Yes.
Every time I try to, every time I try to
sort of predict.
Predict. Every time I try to predict these things, I'm never on the money, ever.
No.
Nature can always surprise us.
I remember that when the first of these happened, which turned out to be very serious, of course, for the people of Grindavík, but when we, you know, when we knew that the peninsula was waking up again, there was an expectation over about a week-long period as to when it was going to happen. And I think everyone in the newsroom was making a guess. They were trying to predict themselves as to when this was going to, to actually start. And as I say, that turned into a very serious eruption preceded by these earthquakes that did lots of damage to the town of Grindavík. I think everyone is a bit more used to it by now. And there's more of an expectation that, you know, all being well, this is going to go off in an area where people are not imperiled and property hopefully is not imperiled and infrastructure is not imperiled. And we've been able to say that with, you know, with reasonable certainty over the last few eruptions. Of course, the car park of the Blue Lagoon was completely inundated
and,
with
and
lava,
poor,
which is an incredible sight.
The Grindavík road constantly being sort of closed off because of the eruption. And of course, we had that one eruption in the town of Grindavík itself. And, you
and
know,
only one, though. Only one.
Just the one.
All of those.
And I mean, the town is now, you know, it's still a ghost town. People are displaced and some companies are still running and people are, you know, it's still their home and they have a really hard time of just letting all that history go. But other people that have completely moved on, they never want to return again. And I think when the cracks started appearing in the town, I think that changed
a lot
of things.
Because we think, and people outside of the country will rightly think when we talk about these eruptions as volcanic eruptions, but you're right, it's the wider seismic activity. It's the fact that these cracks opened up in a town.
Yeah.
And only, you know, one person did sadly, tragically lose their lives. That was one of the workers who was trying to
fill in the cracks.
Yeah, sew the ground back up again after one of these earthquakes. But it was the quakes that really did the physical damage to the town of Grindavík. And that's got to be terrifying, the idea, particularly if you have kids, that the earth might open up.
Yeah, that they could just be running around, that you cannot be at ease thinking that, you know, your children are outside running around because you don't know, if the ground's going to swallow them up.
Yeah.
I mean, and these are massive cracks that formed on sort of two edges around the middle of the town. Mm. So right down the middle of the main roads and the church and the gymnasium and the school. Mm. Like it's going right and the cemetery. So it's people's histories that was broken up.
And I've spoken to people, as you will have too, in Grindavík, who love the town. It's a great place. It's a great town. It's not
it's
on
beautiful.
The tourist trail, really, but it's worth visiting, or certainly was worth visiting as a really interesting town on the south coast of Iceland. Reasonable size as well. I think about 3,500-4,000 people before this happened.
Yeah.
So it's not a small place. It's not a tiny little village.
No, not like compared to like Iceland. Like, of course, maybe in other countries it'll be considered a tiny village. But
No, it's a proper place with proper facilities and infrastructure and a lot of history and a lot of people who love the town. And it's a very great shame that, at the very least, there is this uncertainty that persists. So every time we talk about the eruption, of course, we might talk about it with a smile on our face and we might say, this is happening again, can't quite believe it, we can set our watch by it. But of course, we have to remember that for people in Grindavík, this is heartbreaking for this to happen time after time.
Yeah, it's a home that they have a very hard time to reclaim again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you for taking us through the week in Iceland.
Thank
I said
you
we'd
so much,
play Dan. Out with this song, which is the winner of Sungvakeppnin 2025. Mm. And we're going to hear a lot of this in Iceland, I think.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be on repeat. You can count on that.
And you know what? I think one of the things that struck me from the final was that there were pre-interviews or pre-performance interviews with all of the acts. And Vibe, the two guys in Vibe, the two brothers, they love a flip chart, don't they? They love having a flip chart and showing people various facts. One of the
facts, they had some interesting data.
Yeah, and one of the facts that they revealed was that 100% of songs which are sung in Icelandic will qualify for the Eurovision final so far.
And so look at that. They came prepared.
They came prepared. Left no crumbs? Is that what they...
Yeah.
The kids be saying? Okay.
The kids be saying.
Right. This is what these kids are singing. They are Vibe. The song is Roa. It is going to represent Iceland at the Eurovision Song Contest this May in Basel. in Switzerland. Enjoy. It's on Roof English Radio. Let's go!
From Roof English, with all the news from Iceland in English at ruv.is/English. Roof English Radio is a daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, Roof.